I hope what you want to do is stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM for the next 2 hours. I'm Dr. Obscure Robert Norris. I'm going to be with you on the air, and hopefully you'll be with me calling in, making it a lively evening. We'll have special phone-in interviews with Phil Baer on the Dolphin Lee seizure coming up on the Bodo's the Beach Glass. Updates on Farr's Fandango. That Representative Sam Farr's special Say Nothing session. A report from Trollbusters Aren't Us, the homeless response to attacks on homeless people. Stay tuned.
Of Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Khan, Walter Ron, Toscanini, Daquan, Gin Gin, Foo Falls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Cruise Jet, Princess Grace, Taking Grace, Trouble in the Silhouette.
We didn't start the fire.
Speaking to Phil Baer, and Phil is a Beach Area Working Group survivor, as well as a survivor of the new City Council. And Phil, you've been active in the Beach Flats for at least 2 decades, and recently you've been sticking your neck out in these anti-war protests, but you have your own little war that's being fought on the poor, and I guess you're sort of on the defending side in the Beach Flats. Can you tell us about that? I am.
About which your audience is no doubt aware, it having been widely publicized, in spite of the fact that everybody says that there is, in fact, no such project. Anyway, by way of filling your no doubt knowledgeable audience in, it's a that would take out about 50 units of housing in the beach flats, housing about 200 people, mostly low to very low income Latinos, and replace them with housing affordable by designation, but in fact not being anywhere close to affordable for those particular individuals who would lose their homes to create the site. A little bit of what we call economic cleansing in the name of affordable housing.
Now, you first heard about this a couple months back, and you kind of heard it was, seemed like it was on the fast track with SCAN and the city staff, and Tim Fitzmaurice even seemed to be, would you say he was pushing it or he was ignoring it?
Well, I think he was being pushed on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you you then attended a Beach Flats community meeting with, I guess, well, give us some of the chronology. First, you had a meeting. There was a meeting where Tim Fitzmaurice called some people together in the Beach Flats. Was that when you first?
No, that wasn't in the Beach Flats. It was out at Garfield Park. A meeting that he called that was supposed to have been I was told it was a discussion of housing issues in the broad sense, and then it turned out to be sort of unofficial unveiling of this project.
Isn't that kind of similar to what happened at the SCAN general membership meeting where this project was again sort of presented as a fait accompli whole, and then in some embarrassment because it really hadn't gotten much public process, they kind of sidelined it into a housing committee where it's still being kept pretty much intact. Give us some update on that.
Right, I'd say that the project has been through no public process, and the SCAN action on it sort of typified that. There was a general membership meeting of SCAN that we were told about as members of SCAN, but the project was not identified as being on the agenda, so we missed it. Then at this meeting, the project was raised, even though it was not agendized. And supposedly there was a vote amongst those there to recommend it, even though some who were there at the time felt that they didn't even have a quorum to do the vote. Nonetheless, it was presented as a SCAN recommendation.
Now, is this the SCAN Housing Committee meeting where I came in and got soundly chastised for starting to record it?
No, that was a later meeting.
I see. Okay, go ahead.
The point being that the project has gone through SCAN and leaked to the media and been given this air of authenticity, this implication of having gone through the appropriate public channels, when in fact the public has yet to get a clean shot at it.
And hasn't there also been some kind of city appropriation that has been something from the planning department or the public works?
Right, there's something from planning where the head of the planning department identifies a sum, I think $248,000 out of this year's community development block grant funds, which I think the phrasing was tentatively set aside for a project in the Beach Flats.
Well,
one has to assume that that's the Dolphin Lee. It seems
could it be
improper to be setting aside money for a project that thus far has not received any inkling of acceptance from a single member of the neighborhood in which it would be built.
Indeed, some members of that neighborhood came to the community forum at the Civic Auditorium about a month ago, many of them the same Hispanic people whose presence made so dramatic a case against the beach flat bulldozing plan, the Third Street realignment, the boardwalk expansion that was set aside in a glorious new city council election this November. These same residents, I guess many of them from the Dolphin Lee, showed up at City Hall and I mean, at the Civic Auditorium and presented their concerns. You spoke very strongly, and then I spoke, suggesting that SCAN had all but, in fact, given its endorsement to this project. And I was severely chastised by SCAN coordinator or co-chair Skip Spitzer, who told me that no such thing had happened, that SCAN simply had an idea before it. Well, you were at a SCAN meeting recently. How far has this idea gotten?
Well, they're circulating a document entitled SCAN Recommendations for the property at 124-126-136 LeBrand Street, parentheses, quote, end quote, the Dolphin Lee Project, SCAN recommendations, which say that the project should be built. And this is being circulated in spite of the fact that, to my knowledge, there was no general membership vote on this double-sided two pages of recommendations. So that's egregious in my opinion. But also what you were saying about the people from that project who opposed the earlier incarnation of the project in last year, and also opposed the expansion of the amusement park, alludes to our darkest fears, which is that this project has been identified by someone with the ulterior motive in mind that by getting rid of these people, they would be eliminating a good part of the neighborhood opposition to things like the expansion of the amusement park and things like the rejection of previous Mercy housing projects, so that in essence this is a way of silencing political opposition.
Indeed, it seems that the political opposition last time, through vigorous work, you, Doug Rand, many other people in the Beach Area Working Group were able to make the community aware of the significance of the Seaside Company sellout, as I put it, how deeply in the pocket of Charlie Canfield, Rodkin, Kennedy, and the Steinau, Quartararo, Walton group seemed to be, in the sense, not necessarily financially, I have no evidence of that, but certainly ideologically in terms of their support for Canfield. And essentially their obliviousness to the kinds of impacts that Canfield's project would have on the community, on the city as a whole, and from my point of view, most important of all, on the poor people in Santa Cruz. And here comes another part of that project back again, apparently leaving in place the clear option to do the Third Street realignment anyway, right?
It almost facilitates the Third Street realignment. And what to me is most telling in terms of sort of confirming that suspicion you're alluding to is the fact that the real underlying problem in the Beach Flats is not the Dolphin Lee, which is not basically substandard by any reasonable definition of the term, nor is it poorly managed, nor is it crime or drug-filled. It's really a very nice two properties, one big extended family in a sense, a lot of Latinos who came up from one village in Mexico and provide a remarkable and charming support group for each other. It really is a delightful community.
Indeed.
So that's not the problem. The real problem is the fact that Seaside Company is systematically buying up pieces of property, evicting the residents of the property, and then destroying the buildings. And this has removed approximately 30% of the original Beach Flats neighborhood and approximately 30% of the original housing stock has been eliminated in this way.
Now,
and the fact that that problem has never been identified and no concept of any nature has ever been identified by way of attempting to address that problem, to me, is suspicious, to say the least.
And in fact, you did try to address that problem most recently at a meeting of the SCAN Housing Committee, which I wandered into the end of, indeed, with my little tape recorder until Skip Spitzer made it a big point to make sure that I didn't record the proceedings at that meeting. Although I suppose I should be pleased that he didn't throw me out, since supposedly it's not even supposed to be an open meeting, though SCAN, I'm sure, prides itself on its openness in these discussions and so forth. But you were making the point there that the Seaside Company is essentially the profiteer, the exploiter, the destroyer of housing in the Beach Flats area. And of course, the rest of the group, I guess much of which seemed to be already have decided that the Dolphin Lee was the nearest thing to heaven that they could think of. Andy Schifrin, apparently one of the main pushers of that project. I'm not quite sure what he gets out of it. Maybe you can clarify that for me at some point. But I guess the committee kind of agreed that, yeah, let's condemn Charlie Canfield. But in fact, they said, and this seemed to me an utterly preposterous rationale. It was hard for me to follow this except as the most obviously self-interested argument, that they couldn't, the idea of, let's say, condemning Charlie Canfield's property, which he has essentially bought and allowed to run down in expectation that the area will be rezoned commercial, perhaps with the assurance of Eileen Fogarty, which I understand was involved last year.
Seal Cirillo.
And Seal Cirillo, our very own people, essentially destroying housing in that area to facilitate a commercial development. It sounds like corruption to me, but, you know, I'm a novice in these affairs. But instead of, instead of saying, let's go after Canfield's rundown housing, let's get a hold of it, let's buy it or eminent domain it and build some real housing there, or else, you know, move it up to code. Instead, they're going after property that is not Canfield's. And the rationale that I heard used was, we don't want to reward Charlie Canfield for, you know, buying and condemning all that property. What did you think of that rationale?
Oh, I thought that was preposterous, no doubt. At the same time, he was acknowledging that it would, in fact, be less expensive to purchase seaside property and build this housing because there wouldn't be that mammoth relocation expense. But he was ready to go with the more expensive project that required the relocation, i.e., throw them out in the street, of 200 very pleasant people, because he didn't want to reward Seaside Company. You know, to me that is just absurd. What the city has to do is somehow indicate in no uncertain terms to Charles Canfield that his speculation that this neighborhood will eventually fall to the bulldozers and be converted to a commercial use is simply not going to happen. And if he makes a little money because he demands a certain price for a piece of property to the city, that's the least of the damage that could be done. And in fact, that would be the first step towards undoing the damage that has been done and is ongoing.
Well, you know, it's an interesting parallel that Andy Schifrin, who I understand in some sense is the major beneficiary or certainly the brainchild and advocate of this project. Is that accurate?
He's carrying the ball very prominently. Whether or not he's the originator of the scheme, I can't say for sure.
Well, Andy Schifrin has been a long-time inner circle old guardist, mm-hmm. has worked with Gary Patton as his aide, and now his aide to Supervisor Marty Wormhout. I've, frankly, never found him terribly responsive to concerns about by poor people and the community.
The public.
And the public generally. I think I regard him as your sort of quintessential gray, loyal bureaucrat.
Yes.
But, I mean, that's, again, he's a nice enough person.
No, I think that's true. He does not, he believes in professionalized government and has very little regard for not only the public, but I don't even know that he terribly respects the elected officials.
Well, I guess, you know, so he comes up with this notion that it would somehow be ethically questionable to buy property from Charlie Canfield that he bought for speculation.
Yes.
Unless, of course, we are doing that and facilitating his development and expansion of the boardwalk, which I presume that Schifrin supported last year. Do you have any information on that?
I believe that he did. I'm certain that he did not in any visible way oppose it.
But doesn't this...
I know he's very fond of the boardwalk. We've run into an article that he wrote about the boardwalk, a very fluffy piece that he entitled Survival of the Funnest, just filled with admiration.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I find it interesting that the same kind of, I guess, in order to preserve the ethical... the ethical conscience of the city, or let's say as a sort of a human rights issue, you don't want to reward the Canfield Company. They are going to evict, you know, 200 people from the Dolphin Lee project, in a project that's already been put together with no public process to speak of, and now they're looking for some kind of frills and trimming to put on this to make it appear to be a public process. So it reminds me of what's going on over in Yugoslavia, that they're, you know, destroying the country in order to protect human rights. I mean, it's becoming fashionable to use what once was and still is a legitimate concern for us, human rights, and indeed not rewarding grafters and speculators. And instead, you turn that thing upside down, you confuse the public, you confuse the scan committee, in this case, with the notion that, well, we want to go with, you know, evicting a lot of families because we'll give them relocation money, and I suppose, I'm assuming the relocation money will not provide enough for them to get housing here in Santa Cruz, and nor will they
not in a long-term basis.
And won't be able to come back into this housing either because the rents will essentially have increased. Is that correct?
And they have minimum income requirements that these people could not meet.
Now, you have proposed an alternative, and that's something I've been encouraging you to do, as well as to reconstitute the Beach Area Working Group, which I think was one of the main reasons we don't have a beach boardwalk expansion plan going ahead today. What is this proposal that you're coming up with?
Well, basically, my wife went around the neighborhood and looked at the assessor's maps and identified 25 units of housing which are owned by Seaside, which they have vacated, which we have reason to believe are readily rehabitable, that word. In other words, you could put people into them in a week, 25 units. And then another 25 units that were just very recently demolished, where the zoning is still easily lending itself to the rebuilding, and then 30 other lots within the beach flats where at some time a little longer ago housing was removed. Add it all up, it's something like 120 units of new housing that could be built with no dislocation of the current residents, whereas the Dolphin Lee would not only kick out 200 people, but would result in no net increase in the number of housing units because it would demolish approximately many units as it rebuilt. So, and of course, the bottom line advantage, well, other than avoiding the cruelty of tossing 200 people out on their butts, the other bottom line advantage is that if you ever managed in any way to acquire or require the Seaside Company to actually put people back in these houses that they've just forced them out of, or build houses and put people into those houses, it would be sending this message to Seaside Company to stop this damn commercial speculation of buy, vacate, and demolish that is essentially eating this neighborhood alive.
Ah, but Andy Schifrin and his allies in the SCAN Housing Committee, wouldn't they tell you that yes, but you are rewarding Charlie Canfield's commercial speculation, and you are probably paying, you have to pay him market value of these houses.
Well, that remains to be seen. Apparently nobody ever thought to ask him how much he wanted for his property. That just sort of indicates the apparent communication breakdown that occurs. There's no reason to believe that Mr. Canfield might not be willing to sell properties at a reasonable price, or if it were indicated in some sort of clear way that he wasn't going to be able to convert those properties to commercial use, maybe he put people back in his housing, or maybe he would build more housing himself and put people in it. He could make money off of housing just like he can make money off of commercial usages. Nobody has ever asked him. It's like nobody dares to speak to the emperor.
Well, is that it, or is it, in fact, do you think it's a sort of reluctance to talk to him, or is it a desire to press on with another project and ignore him?
Ignoring Charles Canfield in the Beach Flats makes no sense whatever. He is here and cannot be ignored.
Well, can it be that Canfield actually favors the Dolphin Lee projects for his own reason?
Oh, I suspect he does. He would be seeing some of the main people who objected to his boardwalk expansion removed. He would be watching the city essentially duplicate his behavior by buying properties and kicking people out of those properties. That would sort of put him in good or bad company with the city, and it would be consuming all of the available money set aside for housing projects so that there would not be the money with which to perhaps approach him with a proposal to purchase some of his lands. I'm sure he's very comfortable with the Dolphin Lee idea.
Well, isn't, you know, one would think that our very moral, particularly the three new council members, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, who made such a high-profile campaign issue of stopping the Canfield Company, lack of public process, saving the housing for low-income people, they would be particularly concerned about evicting people who are Hispanic and low-income, instead of making use of housing that's already there to expand the housing stock, unless there is some other factor at work here that we don't know about. And you have been, I guess, expressed not merely as did Fitzmaurice to his sort of unveiling meeting, but Crone and Sugar at a subsequent meeting of the Beach Flats Community Center seem to be very strong in their advocacy.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I would go that far. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think it still is possible that they were sort of lulled into this idea because of the, you know, knee-jerk, progressive, favorable reaction to anything called affordable, and the knee-jerk, progressive, disfavorable reaction to anything called substandard, even though in this case the term affordable means nothing, and the term substandard is just an evaluation that for ulterior motives that has nothing to do with the legal definitions of the law. I think these people those people know lots about lots of things, but affordable housing projects in the Beach Flats are not anything that any of them know much about at all, and I think they're gradually realizing that they got jerked around, and I'm hoping that they're waking up.
Well, is your hope one of these fantasies, or does it have any substantial basis? Have you had any conversations?
I've heard inklings of suggestions that people, individual council members, are wondering why Andy Schifrin has got such a
thumb in the pie.
Yes, exactly, and beginning to realize that these 200 people would not be well served by this project, and other realities I think are slowly dawning on them, and I'm hoping for I hope they'll back off on this.
Well, it seems to me, and of course I've encouraged you to get in touch with Tim Fitzmaurice, and I guess you did, and he has he given you any specific...
He's not as gung-ho as he used to be. He's mincing words a bit, not being real committal one way or another.
I gotta kind of, stop my my temptation to spend my time sticking my thermometer up the ass of these politicians, because I'm not interested in, whether they're medium, hot, lukewarm, or just passing, num-num about these projects, if they're not standing behind rights for people in the beach flats, to me, that says something very clear. And I know that as a practical politician, you want to be careful about not burning your bridges and careful about not, certainly not making any false claims. But I've been seriously attacked by people like Skip Spitzer for essentially suggesting that GAN is facilitating a done deal. And I would suggest that that's what I've understood from you, that there is, in essence, a done deal happening, and that if it doesn't happen...
Well, it's not done.
Right.
By any stretch of the imagination. We're jumping on it with both feet at every conceivable level, spending large amounts of time evolving alternative plans.
Let me rephrase
critiques.
Let me rephrase that. I don't mean done in the sense it's completely done, but that in the absence of opposition would be a done deal. In other words, this...
Oh, I resent the process. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, is that am I blind? Am I being, you know, too partisan here?
It's been handled very badly, and I can't deny a certain sense of betrayal. On the other hand, we are a long ways from conceding this thing.
Oh, definitely not. No, I would not suggest that. I think that part of the fight has to be aptly characterizing what is happening now and aptly calling a spade here in the situation.
That's why we have you.
Well, no, Phil.
Call spades hearts.
Oh, you're so sweet.
And,
let me ask you, how can people help to, focus on really expanding affordable housing and not simply giving certain bureaucrats pet projects?
Well, the key here is the Seaside Company and how one gets the neighborhood back to what it was before they started chewing it up. There are strategies that still need to be identified, but we haven't even talked to them. So it might be a perfectly comfortable operation with a willing seller and willing buyers. If not, there's always eminent domain, and this seems like a perfectly appropriate opportunity to use it in a just and progressive manner.
How can people contact are you calling yourself the Beach Area Working Group again, or what committee or group is pursuing this?
Oh, Beach Area Working Group is involved with it. Some more than others, and
number to call you at?
Not quite as vigorously as ourselves. I'd be, let me give you 423-0170.
423-0170. Sounds like your number, Phil.
Yes, be happy to talk to anybody about it anytime.
Okay.
Appreciate the opportunity to air the number. Also like to mention, while I have you here, the National Day of Protest on Saturday, the 5th, day after tomorrow at 1 p.m. at the main post office.
And for those, of course, who are going up to San Francisco, I think it's 8 o'clock in the morning at the, I believe it's at the county building, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, but I would like to see it become something significant here in Santa Cruz.
That's against the war, the bombing in Yugoslavia.
Exactly.
Got any updates or news reports you want to pass on to us about? We've heard that Milosevic has accepted the peace settlement that I was.
I heard that his legislature had, but he was not really solid behind it. I'm not going to believe it till the bombing stops.
The bombing has to stop. That's what I think we should return to Representative Farr's office, should we say, to encourage him to do. I understand he took a stop the bombing button. How sweet of him. After the forum, although he...
Did he give you your 50 cents?
I didn't really try to sell it to him because I think it would be a form of abuse of a button if he were to put it on, given his position, which is, of course, 72-hour ceasefire and then support the president's resumption of the bombing. His office has clarified yesterday it hadn't changed that position as far as it knows.
No, I don't see that he has.
No. Well, we've been talking to Phil Baer here, again, whose phone number is 423-0170. He's attempting to propose an alternate plan where the housing stock in the beach flats will be expanded and improved rather than forcing homeless people, Hispanic people, to making them homeless, making them relocate. If you want to be a part of that process or learn more about it, give a call to him at 423-0170. Anything you want to add, Phil?
I think that about covers it. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Phil.
Talk to you later, then.
Alrighty.
Bye, Robert. Bye.
Maggie went green, 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 but that was what she had to do. Maggie went green, 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 Sanji and Sanji told her to put a wind machine on every hill and dale, build up stock for a future sale. Maggie went green, it's the way the wind blew. If Maggie is green, 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 it's the green of the slime on a stagnant pool. To learn the meaning of green, she'd have to go back to school and learn that green is a natural hue. It'll mix with red if the red is true. Maggie's not green, she's a royal navy blue,
and she'll tread on you in her
blue suede shoes.
Okay, that was, what was that? That was Peggy Seeger. And Peggy Seeger is, of course, the primo pointed political satirist of our time, as far as I'm concerned, beating all these softy weenies like Tom Paxton and, well, I don't know. She seems to me she has a real edge to her satire, and she still does her stuff. A lot of feminist stuff now, a lot of gentler stuff, but her political stuff is right on. And that's what I'm looking for, some nice, strong, satirical songs for all you folks who have. Looks like an incoming call. Let's see who's on the line.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Hi, Mr. T, what's
how
up?
How are you?
I'm good.
Is that somebody from the, talking about the boardwalk?
Yeah, we just had Phil Beer talking about his plan to establish and develop real housing rather than the, now it looks like another sellout, prefabricated, staff-supported plan from the old guard in the city. And
yeah,
we're looking to see that roll down the pike.
Materialize.
Yeah, what do you got, what word you got for us today?
Let's see. Well, I'm going to be on the air tomorrow.
Oh, really?
On KSCO.
Oh, good. What are you going to talk about?
About my organization.
Operation Homo.
On tape.
Uh-huh.
And Susie. And it's going to probably be around after five, the 5:30, it's going to be on tape. On tape between 5 and 5:30.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, keep us advised. I know that you've been looking into trying to open up some winter shelter. In fact, we had a meeting about that subject at the Homeless Services Center today, which I'm probably going to turn to shortly and talk about, and you're welcome to listen into that. We have another meeting tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the Homeless Services Center to talk about the assaults on homeless people.
Yes. Well, I tell you, I'm totally opposed to this, what's going on.
Right on.
Local law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they do their little dirty deeds.
Dirty deeds, indeed. Well, thanks for calling in, Mr. T. Is there anything more you want to add?
Yeah, if somebody, any homeless person wants to give me a call, you have my number.
Well, why don't you give it to me?
Okay, it's
831-475-9229.
And that's my office home phone number.
Sounds good.
And I can refer them to the Community Action Board. And I can also refer them to YouTube.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Mr. T. Bye-bye.
And he will refer you. That's Arlen, or Mr. T, as I call him. He's been keeping his eye on homeless affairs for at least a decade. Arlen uses somewhat more conventional means, calls up legislators and so forth, tries to get them to open up winter shelter, and that's all to the good, though I'm kind of cynical about how effective that kind of stuff is. You can give a call to us here, by the way, at 427-3772. Right now, of course, we have another call, and we only have one line, but keep trying.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert, this is Charles Martin, Jr.
Oh, excellent. Charles, let me talk a little bit about you and introduce you for those folks who don't know who you are. And I'm going to ask you to actually talk a little bit yourself, though. You are, what, on day 8 of your fast?
Oh, that's funny. Actually, it's day 16.
Mamma mia, I'm 7 days behind the times.
Yeah, a little bit behind.
Well, I got to send you up a couple of burgers or something, man.
Oh, you do
that. So you are 16 days fasting. You're calling us, of course, long distance from, is it Oakland?
Yeah, I'm in Oakland. I'm home in Oakland.
Okay, let me see if you're coming across on the board here. You've been living in Oakland, what, for a number of years now?
Yeah, I'm a resident of Oakland, but I was born and raised on the Monterey Peninsula, mm-hmm. as well as Santa Cruz. I think we can get to the point. I don't know if you played the foundation regarding my father.
I have not, but I'm going to do that right now unless you want to do
no,
it.
No, I'll allow you to do that.
Okay. I, of course, first spoke with you about 6 or 8 months ago. Actually, I think it was even before that. Your father was killed by, I think it was originally a Santa Cruz police officer who was, reassigned or got another job in Monterey. Your father was Charles Vaughn Sr. He was a community activist, an activist who was involved with many things. He's you're both men of color, African Americans, and he was approached.
I think the one thing, Robert, is that my father actually made his name in education. He was an educator for over 20 years, teaching primarily at the elementary school level. And in addition to being an activist in the union, so when you talk about his background and the relevancy to Santa Cruz, is basically that I grew up in Santa Cruz when my father was doing his undergraduate work there.
That's good. I'm checking my levels here, Charles. Sorry, we have a little technical problem. I want to clarify again for the audience. We have on the line with us Charles Vaughn Jr., whose father was killed. Would you say murdered by Seaside Police?
He was definitely murdered by one of the officers that you allowed to get out of Santa Cruz without having him prosecuted for rousting homeless people and being the typical brutal officer. Joseph Britannia has been in Seaside, he's been involved in at least 2 deaths of African-American people who are mentally ill.
What was the name of this officer, by the way?
His name is Joseph Britannia.
Joseph Britannia. Could have been one of the Code Blue people. That was the Code Blue courses where police officers were essentially fired for beating up homeless people, and there was, I guess, even a couple of homeless people died here in Santa Cruz in the late 70s, and I guess 5 officers were tried, none were convicted, but eventually I think they were dismissed from the police department anyway or resigned. But you are, of course, this tragedy happened to you last May, a year ago, in Seaside, where mental health invaded your house, or your father's house, demanded that he, I don't know what, go to the hospital or seek...
He had done no crime, he had done nothing out of the ordinary. He didn't meet the standards for 5150, either gravely disabled, dangerous to himself or to others. And so basically, she had determined in her mind that she wanted to have him evaluated, and the cops were going to basically assist her in any way possible. And the way they end up doing it is killing my father. Mm-hmm. My father goes, they knock on the door, he says, how can I help you? And they had a cordial conversation. And then she came back again with the police about 10 minutes later. My father goes out the back of his home, climbs up on a shed, goes and sits on the top of his roof. And once he's on top of the roof,
trying to get away from the police.
He's trying to get away because he hadn't done anything. He hadn't done any crime, but it continued to harass him. But it turns out that the officer, Lewis Lumpkin, had been harassing him for the past few months. And he even says in the district attorney's report that they developed that my father hated him, but yet he's the lead person who's instigating this killing. And so my father goes on top of the roof, sits down, they identify that he's sitting on the roof and he has a corkscrew. Well, the officer in the district attorney report said, well, I wanted to say a stabbing instrument because I thought if I were to report it was a corkscrew, it would have been kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is my father's sitting on his butt on the top of his roof, the officer in the shed begins to spray him with pepper spray. He turns, he lays on his stomach, stomach, two other officers join him. That's Ron Guth and Joseph Britannia. Those two immediately pull out their weapons as my father's laying on his stomach in the prone position, and he's saying out loud where all the witnesses have said, he was saying, leave me alone, I haven't done anything. And so at this point in time, the officer Lewis Lumpkin, the one who said my father hated him, who has this malice, this meets all of the same criteria that they found in the Corcoran cases when you had these guards setting up these killings. What happens is, he tells the two officers who are there, he says, I'm going to go on the roof and subdue him if, in fact, he stands up when I get up there to cap him, which is to shoot him. And so basically, what happens is he goes to spray. Before he gets on the roof, my father goes to lift up, and they shoot him. And at that point in time, they shot the wrong person. And so what that brings us to is that the community down there in Seaside, actually, I believe you have Mike Smith in Santa Cruz, has been very helpful.
Yeah.
I would say the first 6 months, he was definitely a regular member. I'm pretty sure the tribe got to him. But he showed up from Santa Cruz down on the peninsula with the Charles Bond Sr. Mental Health Police Practice Task Force. And they worked with 20 different individuals from different organizations. They put aside their different allegiances to look at what could be done so in the future this would never happen again to another person who has a mental illness. Now the community responded because they could put a face on my father, because my father, one, was an educator. So they had now, because they had previously killed, as I mentioned before, another African American, and they were offered training by Alliance for Mentally Ill, and the City of Seaside Police rejected it. And then here comes my father, and because they're untrained and already smelling blood from the last killing, they kill again. Well, to make a long story short, what it brings to is you have a community that has stayed organized for over a year. The task force, which was chaired by Mel Mason, which is still currently chaired by Mel Mason, a former council member, and I would say just community activists. What happens is this, Robert, and this is very critical, because this is the face that must originate at any time there's any kind of illegal police action, that the community has come together and put together a strategy. And their strategy is, one, what led to this? Well, what led to it was these police were not trained. So one of the demands from the task force was that the police officers in Seaside need to receive immediate training. This was put out 11 months ago. Second was that they had to develop a comprehensive countywide book on police procedures and protocol.
Really?
That's on the countywide, so not just to look at Seaside, but on the county level.
Really?
And third was to actually put together these crisis intervention teams. That is so important, because the one thing that does, it takes the police out of these non-emergency matters, and you put medical professionals in there if, in fact, an issue arises.
Well, and hopefully that the medical professionals will be less trigger happy than the cops, huh?
Yeah, well, no, we're talking about unarmed medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about cops, we're talking about people who actually have training in crisis intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Because of these types of situations are occurring not only in Seaside, here in Oakland, there in Santa Cruz, Happy John died.
Yeah.
I mean, this
mm-hmm.
is obvious that the training that they're receiving from POST, which is Peace Officer Standing and Training, is inadequate. From my understanding now, what they're currently training these officers on is a 1992 catalog, and it trains them to deal with people who have a mental disability such as retardation. So they're not dealing with the realities of our society. Let me go back. I've told you the three issues that the task force laid out. The fourth one was that these officers be prosecuted, indicted, and prosecuted. Okay, where we got to? We got up to the one-year anniversary, which was May 19th, which also happens to be Malcolm X's birthday, which happens now in addition to the celebration of Malcolm, which I normally try and take off. Now I'm also going to celebrate my father's life. Well, the fourth one that I already mentioned. Now, this is where we're at. I announced on the 19th I was going on a hunger strike. Within the first week and a half, the police had announced that they had picked dates to go to the training, which I want to be clear, this is not
something divided. This is what the members from the community who stay together and work together accomplish. I just seem to be a catalyst. They are the ones who made this happen because they laid the foundation. The second one was the county released this long-awaited book on police protocols on a county level that was developed. That's my father that released that. On Saturday, the Congressman Sam Farr, who you guys are very aware of down there, because he's had a couple of people arrested, was for the war protest. He finally got off his duff. He had been so silent, we didn't think we had a congressional representative down there, and he announced that he had found a way to fund these crisis intervention teams. And it's through money that they have sitting in the Justice Department that will allow communities like Santa Cruz, and so you have to be on top of this so that your activists can move in and get these mechanisms as soon as possible, get this money. There's going to be money available.
But you are still on a hunger strike, and
yes,
that's because the fourth demand,
there you go, Robert. Thanks for keeping me on track.
Mm-hmm.
But the fourth demand, that the Justice Department complete an unbiased investigation. They have found that very hard to do. They continue to say that it is open. We've had Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, lobbying for us. We've had Congressman John Conyers. We've had Congresswoman Maxine Waters. And they continue to say that it's open. It does not need to be open. All they have to do is get the information. They never for one day contacted anybody in my family. They've never contacted Protection Advocacy, Inc., who has done an independent investigation. They've never contacted anybody. So the only thing they actually have is the one-sided district attorney report. And if they read that critically, that indicts those officers.
Well, let me ask you this, Charles.
Yes.
Are you looking, in fact, for an indictment of the officers or simply for, a satisfactory Justice Department investigation? Because I understand that you're really looking for an indictment of the officers.
Right, Robert. I mean, there's a reality here. The U.S. attorney here in California has a fairly clear record of not indicting officers. There's no doubt about that. But I'm saying anybody who reads this in an unbiased way will see that the criteria for excessive force would be met, in particular in regards to Lewis Lumpkin, who had already talked about a conflict amongst the two of them. And so now you have that malice, then you have the order. See, because one of the things that happens is in a situation like this, police are supposed to de-escalate, when in fact he put in effect an order to have him killed. So if in fact it's read, if the information is read correctly, which the district attorney in most cases failed to do, which Monterey County Dean Flippo failed to do. And the reason he failed to do it because what he did was he analyzed from the point that my father stood up on that roof that he said that my father was the aggressor. Well, from my understanding on the federal mandate, they look at the big picture. And so I'm saying, Robert, the answer to your question is I'm looking for a full independent investigation. That means that the information that we have that they don't have is included in their analysis.
Let me ask you this, Charles.
Yes.
You say that Patients in Advocacy has had one investigation already. What was the outcome of that investigation?
That one is going to be a public report. They actually haven't released it. But as a family member, I have the ability to be able to speak to them. And basically what I was told was that there are some very serious issues regarding the police and mental health. And what that tells me is because they don't have the authority to be able to do what the federal government has the mandate to do.
But are they calling for the indictment of the officers involved?
No, because that's not their authority. They're more of an advocate so that this doesn't happen again. So there's a difference. They have to tread a thin line because they do have subpoena powers to be able to get the information. But if, in fact, they started to call for the indictments of these officers, then it would cross the boundary to more of an advocate.
Of course,
but that's not their role. The Justice Department has that sole responsibility.
Well, though, of course, murder investigations are state involved by the state, but of course, I guess they can investigate denial of civil rights. That's true. I know that I wish that we had had somebody like Patients and Advocacy coming in to look into the case of Happy John Dine, which was completely sold out by our Citizens Police Review Board.
And you're tuned to Free Radio's Santa Cruz. Looks like we're going to get our caller back.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry about that.
That was actually me.
Robert, I think the couple things that I know time is getting short, that I would like to mention is this, is that since I've been on the hunger strike, I've lost 22 pounds as of yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel each day that goes by, my body is weaker, although my mind is more determined than ever,
mm-hmm.
that I've chosen the right course. And I think one of the things I would like the listeners down in Santa Cruz to do is to be able to contact the U.S. attorney and demand that they, because what happened was they were contacted by someone else from family, which is Families Against Murderous Law Enforcement, and they were contacted and told of this hunger strike. And so what they said was, okay, we'll set you up an appointment to come meet with us, but we'll set it up where it's 2 weeks away. And so now I have until next Thursday, they set June 10th as the date that I would come in. And so what I'm asking is if people could actually call the U.S. Attorney's Office. The phone number is 415-436-7200.
That's U.S. Attorney's Office at 415-436-7200. And tell them what?
And tell them move the meeting up immediately. The gentleman there, his name is Robert Mueller. He has the ability to be able to move it up as the U.S. Attorney, and it needs to happen. I don't know how I will make it into next week. I've already lost 22 pounds. My doctor says that is more than most people will lose in doing it for a month. So I need some help from the people of Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to be a victory for my father. It's going to be a victory because of the U.S. Justice Department has the obligation. They have, this is their sole purpose in pursuing these types of cases. When you have them that are so clear cut.
I want to tell you something, Charles, that
yes.
Last night at the forum on the war against Yugoslavia, Bill Monig stood up and spent 10 minutes urging the people to support your concerns on this issue against police misconduct for retraining police around treatment of people who are mentally ill, and for, I don't know if you specifically called for the indictment of the killers here, or the killer, but...
I want a full independent investigation.
Well,
if
that was
the end results in it, which I believe it will, then that would be the case. The one thing you mentioned about Bill Monning, I would like to go actually on record and let you know that Bill Monning's leadership and his integrity by standing up to the system. He actually called me. He was the very first one to call me and say that he wanted to go on a hunger strike in sympathy with me in regards to demanding a Justice Department investigation.
Charles
actually urged him not to because I didn't want anyone else to endanger themselves.
Mm-hmm. He announced that as well, and he announced that he was calling for people to go on a serial hunger strike where they would take a few days and kind of spread them around, go on a hunger strike for 1 day to a week, and then move on. Another person would do that, and he called for that in the audience, and there seemed to be a lot of sympathy for that, though no one specifically signed up that I saw.
At this point in time, there are 10 people. There are 10 people. Two more people joined today.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the list grows, I just want to let you know that everybody's body takes these types of actions a little bit different. And so these people are actually putting themselves on the line for someone they didn't know, but in reality, it's a victory for one of us, it's a victory for all of us, and that's how we must stand. If there's something that goes down in Santa Cruz, you can call me, you can call anybody from the task force, and we'll respond as if they're family members, because we know what injustice feels like.
If anybody who's listening, we're talking to Charles Vaughn Jr., who is on the 16th day of a hunger strike, which apparently has cut seriously into his health and well-being, but intends to continue seeking a full independent investigation of the murder of his father last May 19th in Seaside, California. You can give a call here to the station, or I should say to the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. And I will pass on those calls and information to you, Charles. I don't want to give out your number. I think you're a little weak.
Robert, we have another number, too.
Oh, good.
And I would like to give that one out as
sure.
well, because I think that would be good for people who will call on the local level.
Sure.
It's 415-864-5153,
mm-hmm.
and that is the number of October 22nd Coalition, which you're aware of, that
1-800-664-5153 if your concerns about police brutality and securing justice for Charles Vaughn Sr. and for Seaside and for the state of California here, and just also for those who are going to follow, those of us in the community who need to have police trained properly, who need to have police know they are not inviolate, that they are accountable to the same laws that we all are, and they have to be responsible even if there's currently a political structure in place that insulates them from that.
Robert, I'd like to make one more statement.
Sure.
There are in the group Families Against Murder's Law Enforcement here. The families are from Sonoma to Monterey,
mm-hmm.
and we actually have a total of 89 families participating. And within those 89 families, not one of those families have had the Justice Department investigate and find any type of wrongdoing on the part of the officers. One of the things that I prayed on, what could I do that may in the future enable other family members not to have to go through this when they know in fact crime has occurred. And I am hoping that this would be the opening of the floodgate for all those other families who have had to suffer out there, knowing, and especially a lot of them doing it in silence. But this is the time that I will not allow it to happen again. I'm willing to put myself out there so that other people will have the opportunity that my father didn't have. And then those officers, we got to talk about accountability, because we talk about, you guys got that police commission down there, they're full of crap. And as long as you have those police commissions that are stacked by the council members, it's not going to work. We have to deal with it at all levels. I'm not